People often say that Easter is religious in nature, that it's something Christian or pagan in origin. I'm here to tell you that it's something far different than you've ever dreamed. I grew up in a small town in Northern Europe, one of those picturesque little villages that you see on postcards, the kind with lots of farms, a cute little main street area that's all cobblestone and brick buildings, a little downtown area with an open market, and lots of hard-working people in rustic clothes with various farming implements herding animals to and fro. I lived above one of those shops with my parents. They ran a general store, and I helped out until I left when I was 16. They were good people, and I don't think they really agreed with what happened. They weren't the kind of people who fell in with religious fervor. But they understood its purpose. The purpose it serves for the community, and they participated, even if unwillingly. The celebration of Lady Yoster was not as old as the village itself, but almost. On Easter Sunday, 12 of the town's children were pushed from their homes and led into the square in the middle of town. Their ages were between 6 and 15, and the event was always preceded by merriment before the night itself. There was a carnival that week. Feasts were eaten, gifts were given, and then the night that everyone dreaded inevitably came. I don't remember much about those nights. I remember the underlying dread I felt as I sat in my room. I remember the silent tears I cried without knowing why. I remember the relief I felt when I'd awaken the next morning to see that it was daylight again. That, and the screams. I still hear the screams sometimes when the nightmares come. To understand why this happens, you'd first have to understand Our Lady. The Lady Yoster was once a hallowed deity. She was the goddess of dawn, and the rays she brought had nourished the land for the founders of the region. Yoster had shown them where to go, where to plant, and the bountiful harvests made the town rich and the cities prosper. They praised her for her generosity and gifts, but she told them too late that there was a price. You see, she hadn't told them what else lay in that valley. There's a cave near Father's Glen, a huge dank maw that breeds nothing but shadows and pain. Those who go in never come out, and it's where the children of Yoster reside. Legend says that once they were birds, creatures of the wind who were free to fly as they would. Yoster turned them into hares, an animal more fitting for a season of fertility and growth. The hares were pleased with this, now free to explore the land they had seen from above, but over time they grew to hate the children of men, who often hunted them and their smaller cousins. When the people moved into the valley, they began to hunt the rabbits for food, which infuriated the hares. The valley was said to be thick with rabbits and hares at one point, but the humans were in for a surprise as they filled their stew pots. The hares began to come out at night to hunt the men, and many of the hares and the humans died as a result. The ensuing skirmishes were good for no one, so Yoster stepped in her infinite wisdom. Yoster brokered a trade, a contest of sorts.
If you would hunt the humans, then give them the same chance you have. For one night, the weakest of them will hide and run. From sunset to sunrise, and any you catch will be your prize. Once a year, you will send 12 of your young ones, one for each month you have hunted the hares, and they will search for them. If they find them, they may take them back to their cave. Those not found will be free to go about their lives until called upon again. My hares will remain below the ground for every other night, never to hunt a human under my protection. This is my decree, and all shall abide.
And so it has been from that day on. I was chosen only once to participate in the festival. The town wasn't huge, maybe 30 or 40 children of the desired age at any given time. And it wasn't uncommon for a name to come out of the kettle more than once. My friend Maria was chosen 4 times, but managed to hide until dawn on all but the last time. A sibling could go in your place, and sometimes they did. One year, a boy named Ellen went in his sister's place and was supposed to have killed 3 of the hares before they got him. I never saw the bodies. Everything was cleaned up, as it always was when we came out the next day. Most years, I just sat in my room with the doors and windows locked as I cried into my arms and tried not to listen to the children below as they screamed. Most years, only a few lucky kids came back. I was fortunate enough to come back when I was selected. I suppose I wouldn't be telling you this story otherwise. I was 8 when I went out to do my duty, as my mother put it. I was scared, but a part of me just couldn't believe I would die or never come back. I was young, and all children believe themselves to be immortal. Hell, even the thought of rabbits coming to get me made me giggle. I could just imagine little bunnies with torches and pitchforks hopping along as they tried to catch a bunch of terrified children. Even as the nun told us about it at the local school, I giggled a little, earning a smack with the ruler for my insolence. You won't think it's so funny when you're in the streets some night and they come for you. I saw my father's face when my name was drawn and couldn't understand the terror. I heard the screams, of course, but I believe they were just people putting on. I knew that people got killed, but I didn't believe it. Why would my parents send me out to do something that could get me killed? My parents loved me, and I knew they wouldn't want me to come of harm. I was confident that this was like Father Christmas or the Tooth Fairy, just a bit of harmless hogwash for children. I had never actually known any of the children that didn't return, so it was like nothing had changed from year to year. How small my world was, and how frightening it seems now that I was so naive. So I sat at the feasts, played the games, and enjoyed myself that week. I saw some of the other children who'd been chosen, and while some looked scared, others clearly didn't grasp what was in store either. They joked about rabbit hunts and bringing carrots to feed the bunnies. We all laughed and talked about how brave we would be, but none of us really understood what was about to happen. Then came Sunday night, and I think it all became real to me. My mother called me into the kitchen just as the sun began to sparkle at the edge of the horizon. She presented me with some gifts for tonight. She had brought me a pair of soft black pants and a very tight shirt. She put a pair of soft shoes on my feet and I could feel their delicate material hug me gratefully.
Listen to me very closely, because what I tell you might save your life. On the night I was chosen to participate, I hid in the horse shed near the drawbridge. The smell of hay seemed to make me harder to find. And if you bury yourself deep in the stack, you should be safe until morning. Don't try to fight them. Don't be careless or brash. Just run and hide and survive. I love you. Your father loves you. And we wish there was any other way but this one.
We wish there was some way to help you,
my father said, suddenly coming in from his study and startling me.
But this is all we can offer you. Good luck. We hope to see you in the morning.
Then they hugged me, both of them enveloping me in their shared embrace, before leading me to the door and showing me out into the semi-darkness. I walked into the square, unafraid as the gas lights flared cheerfully. Why should I be afraid? This was my home. I had run over these streets with my friends. As we played by the fountain in the square, we had gone to the market and bought candy and toys with our allowance, and we had gossiped and giggled as we walked to school. Nothing here could hurt us. Nothing here could threaten us, as the warm stones of our hometown wrapped us in a cocoon of safety. This was just a game that grown-ups played, and it would prove as hollow as the stories of the boogeyman or the goblins who came to take away naughty children. I could see the others as they filtered into the square, but there was no quiet chatter or laughter now. As the sun set, casting the last light on the town, we heard the bell toll and saw the mayor come out on the balcony that overlooked the square. He looked resplendent in his long coat, his shoes with the buckles gleaming in the dancing torchlight, as he stared down at us from his high perch. He looked sorry to see us here, but resolute in his decision. He would carry this out, and then he would step back inside so he wouldn't have to watch the results of his actions.
We give thanks to Eusta for a bountiful harvest, for the valley where we live, and for the gifts she has given us generations ago. We ask her to watch over these little ones as they hide from her children. May she take pity on them and let them come home again.
He said more, going on for what felt like hours, but my head had turned from him as I heard the noise. It was the harsh flip of two large feet, the echoing thump of heavy footsteps, and as I looked, I saw them. There were three of them, all tall and lithe, with arms and legs too long to be human. They didn't so much walk as they galumphed, as if walking on two legs was never something that would become normal for them. As the mayor droned on, I saw one of them become too eager and step close to the edge of the alley they were hiding in. His fur was snowy white, a speckling of brown making him look as though he had freckles from his chest to his nose. Around his neck and across his shoulders, to my surprise, were feathers, and I remembered suddenly that they once had been birds. His mouth had a distinctly beakish look, and I felt cold dread creep into me as this creature hulked at the ready. It held a delicate-looking flint knife in its too large hand, and my humor at the thought of being hunted by bunnies was gone now. These were not the cute, hopping creatures you sometimes saw in the glen. These were like the trolls and goblins we were told stories about. Old and mean and utterly devoid of human kindness.
As the sun sets, I beg you all to flee. Go now, before they are set loose by that ancient promise.
Some of the others had seen them too, and I was suddenly aware that the press around me was thinning. Children of all ages were running, fleeing into the corners and alleys we all knew so well. I was running too, leaving behind the few who still gaped at the mayor as he moved away. They would give me time to run as the creatures found them first. Their screams were high and terrified, but mercifully short. I ran for the stables, just like my mother had told me to, but the hares didn't stay in the square for long. The streets echoed with those strange hopping thuds, and I could hear them as they caught others. The children were easy to track. They wept. Their feet thudded loudly. Their breathing was much too deep, and the hares seemed to locate them easily as I ran for my life. Unlike the others, my shoes seemed to whisper over the cobbles. They were soft, hugging my feet like a second skin, and though the night was breezy, I never heard my clothes so much as a flap. I was like a shadow as I traversed the streets of my home, and when I saw the bridge looming up in the distance, I put on an extra burst of speed. When I heard the flapping, glumping sound of those wide, flat feet, I threw myself against a nearby wall and stayed as quiet as possible. I could hear it as its feet slapped on the hard cobbles, its nose twitching as it tasted air that likely stank of humanity. The sound of its twitching nose made my skin crawl. The noise akin to bugs as they nest beneath the loose cobble. I put a hand over my mouth as my fearful breathing threatened to give me away. I couldn't tell you how long I stood there, time seeming to creep by as the creature looked and sniffed. Fear time is always different from actual time, and the stretch of seconds can take decades in that moment of extreme fear. Then, mercifully, he left, and I ran like the rabbit I had become for the stables. The stables were empty, the horses taken elsewhere, but the hay trough still remained. I plunged into the itchy depths, making myself into a ball as I shuddered at the bottom of the pile. The clothes my mother had given me were long-sleeved and legged, so I had only to cover my face so the itchy depths wouldn't give me away. The scent of hay was strong, and the dust that coated me made me stifle a sneeze. I had to be silent. I couldn't do anything to give myself away. I lay at the bottom of that trough for hours, my adrenaline running high and my ears straining for the smallest sound. I heard them when they came in the first time. There had to be at least two of them. Their feet slapped at the cobbles as they searched the stalls. I heard them turn over tubs, open closets where the horse tack waited, and grumble in their strange language when they found nothing. When one of them came towards the hay trough, I thought I was done for. It dug through the hay, pulling handfuls away as it searched, and I pressed myself as flat against the bottom as I could manage. I had to stuff my fist into my mouth, careful not to rustle the hay, for fear that I would begin screaming at the thought of those creatures being so close to me. My fist was sweaty, the taste of hay and dust likely to choke me, but I held absolutely still as it threatened to uncover my hiding spot. When it sneezed, the dust getting into its nose, I almost sighed in relief. It scooped out a few more handfuls before stopping, sneezing again as it moved away. Those deep thumps took it out of the horse stall, and I was left to shiver and shake as my adrenaline coursed through me. Somehow, as the adrenaline ebbed and my body began to ache, I fell asleep at the bottom of the trough. When I awoke, it was daytime, and the night of terror was at an end. My mother found me, Hay still clinging to me as I walked towards home. She pulled me close and kissed my hair, thanking Yostra for my safe return. Given that Yostra had been responsible for what had happened last night, it seemed silly to thank her. That night was 15 years ago, and I've since moved from my small rural village. Hamburg makes the place I was born look like a dirt track, and after college, I found work as a foreman at a textile mill. My parents call me once a week, sending letters in this age of email instead of getting with the times. I've settled down now, had a child of my own, and our conversations always seem to turn to when they will get to meet their grandson. My answer is always the same, when you come to Hamburg to see me. After what I've witnessed in this place, after sitting in my room for 8 years with the knowledge of what was going on outside the walls of my house, I will be damned if I let my son anywhere close to their warren or those snuffling monstrosities. So, when you hear of the resurrection, as you bite the ears off your chocolate bunny, count yourself lucky that you live without the fear that was such a part of my childhood. Remember that somewhere there is a bunny that would love nothing more than to bite the ears off of you.